Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further, faster. On today's podcast, we're going to discuss six important questions that every leader needs to ask. Before we get to these six, I'd like to start with a question, I guess really about questions. And one of the things I've observed after just working with you for 20 years is you ask a lot of great questions, and you ask a lot of questions. And why do you place so much emphasis on this?
Well, you know, I don't think I do it on purpose. I think I just want to learn, and the only way to learn is to ask questions, especially when I'm around other leaders or you see people do things well. You know, the tendency is always to evaluate what we do wrong. But when you see somebody else doing something well, you know, you want to understand the why behind right. The what. And so I've just been in the habit of asking lots of questions.
I remember you telling me a story one time about, I guess, going fishing with your dad, and there was another pastor there, and he maybe didn't value questions quite as much.
Oh, gosh. And you know, growing up with a somewhat famous father, at least in the circles he runs in, I see this all the time. And the occasion you're talking about, this guy took us fishing. We were in a boat with him for 2 days. So like from 6:30 in the morning till about a little after lunch, we fished with this guy. And he never shut up. And I thought, and he was so excited that my dad was there. And I've, you know, Dr. Stanley, I've watched you on television for years. And you blessed me and on and on and on. And then he never stopped talking. He never asked my dad one question. I thought, you just spent 2 days with a guy that you have great admiration for. You know, here's your opportunity to ask him anything. I mean, you could have learned 3 or 4 years worth of lessons just by asking my dad questions. And honestly, we got in the car after both days of fishing and just laughed at, he didn't learn a thing. And yet I'm sure he went and told his friends, I spent 2 days with Dr. Stanley fishing. Well, what did he say? Nothing, because I did all the talking. So, you know, and that's just his personality, and he was nervous. But, right. You know, you think after about a half a day of talking, you'd at least
come up with one question.
Come up with one good question. So, yeah, so the only way to learn is to ask questions. And so I just think leaders are learners, and you're either going to read or you're going to ask questions.
Right. You say a lot to our staff about how the questions we ask actually say a lot about us.
Yeah, the questions we ask most communicate our values. I think every leader listening accidentally communicates what's most important to them at work and at home by the questions they ask. And, you know, we can stand up and do great talks on here's what our company values. But if you want to know what somebody values, listen to their questions, not what they talk about when they talk about what they value. And this can be accidental or this can be intentional. One of the best ways to reiterate or to underscore values is to ask questions that draw people's attention or even direct their behavior toward their values. You know, if I say, you know, in our world, we're in ministry, if I say, well, what really matters is people. People matter. But if every single time I'm in the office, I'm asking about the offering, you know, what was the offering? What was the offering? What was the offering? Well, you know, the people around me are going to realize, well, what's most important to Andy is the offering, because he only asked about how much money came in. He never asked about stories. He never asked about people. So again, if you listen to the questions you ask, that is a message. And then if you think about what you want to reiterate in your organization, if you will create questions around those values and ask those questions over and over and over, you will direct people's thinking and you will direct people's behavior, whether you ever do a talk on your organization's values or not, because people listen to the questions that are asked and they respond.
Hmm. You say you'll direct their behavior. That's the result then.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If I ask my assistant every single Monday morning, you know, what was the offering yesterday? Well, before long, I'm going to show up and it's going to be sitting on her desk. I will never have to say, would you please, you know, print out what the offering was? It will be there because, you know, her behavior will be shaped by the questions I continue to ask. You know, at home, if I tell my kids, hey, I just want you to do your best, just do your best. But then if I'm constantly asking them if they made an A, well, you know, I may say that what I value is do your best, but at the end of the day, they're going to be working for grades because they know that's what I actually value. You know, if you get a call from your spouse or if I get a call from my wife and she says she's had an accident, the next question that comes out of my mouth is a very important question, isn't it? If I say, was the car damaged, then I've just said to her, what I value more than you is the car. If I say, are you okay, then I'm communicating what I value is you more than the car. So you can see in a situation like that, the question I ask is very important. But I think that's true organization-wide, it's certainly true with our family. So we need to be careful what we ask, and we need to be intentional about what we ask. So I think the takeaway is we need to listen to the questions we ask and make sure those are the questions we should ask. Then I think we should think about what is actually most important to our organizations and create questions that direct people to what we really value or what we should value, I guess, because questions are very, very powerful.
You've actually led us in taking the step of associating a question with every one of our core values for that very purpose.
Yeah, years ago when we sat down and came up with our core values, they're just static. They're just statements. They're not dynamic. But we decided let's attach a question to every value because it's easy to ask the question that, again, points toward a behavior. And so, yeah, we took the time to say, okay, what's the question we should ask ourselves or ask each other as it relates to this particular value? And it is much easier to integrate questions into talks and into conversations than it is a statement, you know, we value, you know, whatever it might be. So, questions are very powerful and they should be leveraged.
You do this every week in our staff meetings. As long as we've had staff meetings, you start by always asking the same thing.
Yeah, I open up our staff meetings by asking the question, what happened yesterday or what happened last week that made you feel like you're successful in what you came here to do? In other words, tell me the stories. Tell me what happened. And what that does is it elicits people telling stories that underscore why they came to work here and what we're trying to accomplish as an organization. So even that question, again, as it surfaces stories, those stories reiterate values. I'm able to do a little teaching without people knowing I'm doing teaching on the values. And so, yeah, even opening up the staff meeting with that same question. And people come to our meetings knowing that's going to be the first question. So, yeah, what happened yesterday or what happened this past week that really connected with what I've come here to do and what we're trying to do as an organization?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you talked about how it shapes behavior. We don't even ask the question anymore. People just line up at the microphone.
That's true.
They have their story.
Yep, they know we're going to ask for stories and they start.
Yeah, well, what's the best way for someone to make this a part of his or her leadership?
Well, I think it goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. I think we need to listen to what we ask and decide, do I really want to direct people's behavior with that question? Listen to what we ask because it is a mirror to what is most valuable to us as opposed to what we say is most valuable. And that's big learning for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge, especially when you think about what you ask your kids, your spouse, and at work. And then to ask the question, okay, then what do I want people to do? And this is probably another podcast for another day, but what are the behaviors that would be best for this organization? If I could come up with five or six behaviors I wish everybody in this organization would do, if everybody would do these things consistently, we're going to be more successful. Well, it's as simple as thinking through, what question can I begin to ask? And it may be targeted to a specific group. What question can I begin to ask that will direct people's behavior in a specific direction? Because as a leader and as a boss or a manager, again, my questions will ultimately direct people's priorities and behavior. So there can be some intentionality around this. But along with that, just listen because you have no idea what you're communicating with your questions.
That's great. And that leads us to our six questions that every leader needs to ask. And some of these we've touched on, but not in this context. And so, Andy, the first question is, who needs to be sitting at the table?
Yeah, this is a question I think every leader needs to constantly be asking. How do I get or do I have the right people at the table? Who needs to be sitting at the decision-making table? This is organization-wide in terms of the broad directional decisions an organization makes. This is as specific as a specific decision that's being made. Before we make a decision, I need to ask the question, who needs to be sitting at the table? Which brains, which sets of experiences, expertise, people who've been here the longest, people who have been here the shortest and bring fresh eyes. I think in every leadership meeting, it's important to ask, do I have the right people at the table? And of course, we all get lazy with this because our meetings are generally scheduled. Mm. It's generally the same people. It's our management team. It's our leadership team. It's our whoever was there last time. But to stop and to ask from time to time, in light of what we're about to discuss, in light of what we're about to decide, do I have the right people at the table? And I tell leaders all the time, when it comes to decision making, do not think through the org chart. The org chart is the org chart, but when it comes to making decisions, you know, you may need to skip over two or three levels, reach way down into the organization, a different department, a different branch, a different location. Create a structure that allows you to get the right people to the table to make the decisions that you're making. So that's a big one.
Yeah, I'm sure that a lot of our listeners would be interested in how you've approached this, you know, this whole thing here at North Point.
Well, I've handled this in several different ways, but let me tell you what has been most successful. What's been most successful for me, and unfortunately our listeners can't view, I draw this. Essentially, I have a management team of three people that are kind of the ultimate decision makers, or I should say the ultimate influencers. But I have a broader circle of about 14 people, and we meet every week. And we call this our leadership team. And it has changed from year to year. And I have the flexibility, or I've given myself permission, to add people and subtract people from that team based on season of life in terms of the organization and the kinds of decisions we're making. And what I've told the group and the leadership team is this: no one will ever make a decision that will impact your future here or your department or division that doesn't happen in this meeting. We are the they. And so in that meeting, I have my direct reports plus several people that report to each of those several people. But These are – everybody in our leadership team I feel like could be a number two person. And I tell leaders all the time the best way to get a lot of number two people is to create an environment where there's a lot of number two type people, because most number two type people could be a number one person. They just don't want to at this particular stage of life, or they don't have that opportunity. But as long as somebody can influence their destiny in an organization, they're generally content to be number two. The problem is, if a leader only has three or four direct reports, then you've really only got three or four people of that quality or that caliber. But to create an environment where you can get a broader input, which is huge to me, at the same time, let that group know you are the they, and ultimately what the decisions that are going to be made that impact your future here are going to be made right here in this room with you sitting here. I just feel like it's allowed me to get better people, keep better people, make way better decisions. But again, I had to create sort of a two-tiered system that allowed me to get the right people in the room.
The second question that we want to ask today is, where are we manufacturing energy?
We ask this question all the time. Where are we manufacturing energy? And what the question means is, where are we pretending? Mm-hmm. Where are we pretending to be more excited about something than we're really excited about? You know, in the marketplace, it's, hey, what product am I being asked to market? What product am I being asked to use? What product am I being asked to be excited about that ideally, if I didn't have to use this product, I wouldn't use this product. It's really not that good. In our world, oftentimes it's programming. It's things we're doing as a church or a group of churches. And so, you know, I say to our staff, is there anything you're having to, you know, promote that you really wish you didn't have to attend? Are there things that we're inviting our children to that your children really don't want to attend? You know, where are we having to manufacture energy, kind of create a sense of excitement that doesn't really exist? And the reason this is an important question is because it forces us to face realities that sometimes we don't want to mess with, because we don't want to change things. It's too hard. It's too expensive. We haven't been doing it that long. It's going to create, we have to retool. We may have to change personnel. So we get accustomed to it. This is the way we do it. This is the way we've always done it. So every once in a while, I just have to say, hey, I feel like maybe we're having to manufacture a little energy around this. I don't feel like this team is as excited as it used to be. Now, is that our problem, or is it the product problem? Is it the program problem? So that's a question we're constantly asking. Where are we having to manufacture energy? What's feeling a little bit tired? Where are we having to convince ourselves that this really is a good idea, but when in our hearts we know, no, this is old, this is outdated, we need to do something different?
Those things we're trying to convince people to go to that we don't really even want to go to ourselves.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, that leads to the third question, and we've touched on this in podcasts before, but it's just so important. We feel like it really warrants further discussion, and it's the question is, where do I make the greatest contribution to the organization?
Yeah, we have talked about this before, but this is one of those questions that I think our natural inclination is to ask it once, and then we get ourselves in a position to where we feel like, okay, this is where I make the greatest contribution to the organization. But time goes by, things change, new people come, new people go, we're at a different season of life. So I think it's a question we need to ask, you know, at least annually, maybe even more than annually. Where in the broad scheme of my immediate responsibilities and where in the broad scheme of the entire organization am I the best fit? You know, where do I make my best investment? And then again, as we've talked about, what can I do to continue tailoring my job description so that my job description actually matches up with where I make the best or the greatest contribution to the organization? And then again, as we've talked about, creating a dialogue with our superiors to be able to say, hey, I'm going to do what you've asked me to do. I just want you to know, as a new market has opened up, as a new product comes online, as we begin to multiply campuses, whatever the context is, I think I would make a greater contribution to the whole if you allowed me to spend more time on this, less time there. But again, we get in a rut, we get lazy, we get accustomed to what we're accustomed to doing, and I think we miss opportunities. And I think we don't help the people around us find their best and highest use in the organization if we don't ask that about ourselves and about them, because there may be things I'm doing somebody else could thrive in if I would just get out of the way and, again, ask myself the question. As we've grown, is there a higher and better use of my time and talent in the organization?
So is the flip side, I guess, to that question, what should I stop doing?
It's always that, isn't it? and we, you know, this is so huge. As organizations grow, leaders need to do less. We think we should do more because there's more to do. But the more the less you do, the more you accomplish, the fewer things you do, the more time you can spend in the area where you make the greatest difference, the organization is better, and you create margin, you create space for the people who, again, may be able to fill in those gaps and do a much better job. So, again, as organizations transition and grow, this is a question we need to constantly be asking.
It's hard sometimes for people to see maybe what they should stop doing, but it's also hard for you to maybe have to tell your boss, maybe this isn't something you should be doing.
Yeah, it's real hard to tell your boss that. You know, and one of the areas where I'm so fortunate is I work with a group of people that I worked with in a different context, and we were peers. I wasn't the boss. And even though that was 17 years ago, I still feel like you and a handful of people here, you know, I hopefully feel the freedom to say, no, don't do that. And every once in a while, I will in a meeting say, you know, I'll handle that. And I can sense everybody in the circle kind of tensing. And what that tells me is we don't want you to handle that. And I've learned to relax and say, okay, obviously, I should let someone else handle this. And all the heads nod like, we love you, but please don't touch that. You will just mess it up. So.
And speaking of none of us want to do that, that leads us to question number four that few leaders like to ask, but it's who's not keeping up?
Yeah, this is probably the most painful question of all. Who's not keeping up? And this is that it's somewhat subjective. It's somewhat intangible. It becomes more and more obvious as time goes by. If you're in an organization where, you know, progress is everything and you're moving forward over time, every once in a while, it becomes apparent somebody that you love, somebody that's been there, somebody that's done a great job, somebody that's really not done anything wrong. They're just not keeping up. You know, the organization was going 40 miles an hour. They were fine. Now the organization's going 60 miles an hour, and they're only good for about 45 miles an hour, and they're doing their best. They're just not keeping up. And so consequently, we don't like to ask this question. We like to work around people. If we're not careful, entire divisions and departments will find themselves working around somebody because we like them. And again, there's no real reason to address their performance other than the fact that everything's going a little bit faster than they're able to go. But this is extraordinarily important question, especially in nonprofit world, because in nonprofit world, we get the business side of things and the mercy side of things confused at times. And it's not honoring to someone to work around them. It's not honoring to sit in a meeting and talk about them and recognize that they're not keeping up and never address that with them. So it's painful, but it's honoring. And so every once in a while, you have to ask the question, who's not keeping up? And again, this doesn't mean these are people who are no longer going to work in the organization. They just need to be asked to work in a different capacity. But I think, and again, especially in church world and nonprofit world, we avoid this question because it doesn't feel merciful. It doesn't feel in keeping with our values or even our sense of conduct and character. But in fact, if we are committed to the mission and vision of our organization, it's a relevant question. It's a question that needs to be asked. And you know, Lane, I think 9 times out of 10, when we sit down with someone to explain, however we explain it, you're just not keeping up, they know. I think we all know. And to some extent, it's a relief for them to have that conversation because they've tried hard and there's that internal turmoil. And if you're that person, what do you do? How do you go into your boss and say, hey, I'm not keeping up? You're just not going to do that. And there's always an honorable way to transition people to a different position. There's always an honorable way to take responsibility off a person. And there's an honorable way to transition someone out of the organization. But we owe it to ourselves because whether you're in the marketplace, nonprofit, church world, what you're doing is important. There are no non-essential personnel. You do not want to punish the people who are working hard with someone who just can't keep up. So it really is a win-win-win, but it is a very difficult conversation to initiate. And every once in a while, I think we have to look around the table and ask our direct reports, hey, is there anybody that's just not keeping up?
The fifth question, and this is one we wrestled through as an organization a couple of years ago, was what have we fallen in love with that's no longer the best way to. And then you fill in the blank.
Yeah, this is This is another hard question. You know, every organization loves the way they do things, or they wouldn't do them that way. Every organization loves their approach, or that wouldn't be their approach. And over time, our approach to things becomes emotional for us. It becomes part of our culture. This is the way we do it here. This is the North Point way. You know, this is the fill in the blank way. And so every once in a while to ask the question, what have we fallen in love with? That is, what have we become emotionally engaged with or emotionally attached to that really isn't the best way to anymore? You know, I compare this sometimes to people who have that couch that they bought that was like the perfect couch for the living room, and it was they needed a place to sit, so they bought the best thing to sit on in that particular room, and then they move to another house, and they take the couch with them, and they find a place for that couch, whether there's a good place or not, and then a few years later they move again, and the couch is starting to look a bit ratty and a bit old, and there's stains, but they just can't bear to not have that couch with them. You know, that's their couch. There are memories associated with that couch. And what began as a place to sit has become a mascot, and it's emotional, and we just can't get rid of it. And everybody that walks in the house looks at that couch and thinks, what is that ugly old couch doing in their living room or, you know, wherever the couch is? And that's fine for our homes. But you take that kind of thinking into organizational life, and it can be very, very problematic. And so every once in a while, it's a good idea to ask the question, what do we enjoy doing? What have we fallen in love with? What are we accustomed to? What is our way? But it's actually not the best way to, again, fill in the blank, whatever it was that we started out doing and why we started doing that.
Yeah, I know there's a question you actually keep on your desk that sort of speaks to this. Tell us that story.
Oh, yeah. Years ago, I read Andy Grove's book, Only the Paranoid Survive, and he tells this story about the fact that they were chip makers, Intel. He was running Intel at the time, and they made memories. They made memory chips. And this was, I guess, in the early 80s, and the Japanese were in that market and were just killing them. Whatever Intel did, the Japanese, before long, they were doing it faster, cheaper, and Intel just couldn't keep up. And part of it was just import-export. Part of it was the fact that there were different rules here than there were overseas. So Andy in his book acknowledges he had just fallen in love with making chips. That's what they did. That's what they had always done. That's what their reputation rested on. So he tells a story that one afternoon he's sitting in his office with the CEO, Gordon Moore, and I'll just read this quote from the book. He said, "I looked out the window at the Ferris wheel of the Great American Amusement Park across the street revolving in the distance, and I turned back to Gordon Moore, the CEO, and I asked this question, and this is the question that sits on my desk. He said, if we got kicked out and the board brought in a new CEO, what do you think he would do?" So he's asking the question, what if we were thrown out of the company and they brought in a new group? What would they do about this dilemma of the fact we just can't keep up with the Japanese, we can't make chips quick enough, and we can't make them cheap enough? He said, Gordon answered the question without hesitation. He would get us out of memories, our memory chips. And then Andy said this, I stared at him, numb, and then I said, why shouldn't you and I walk out the door, come back, and do it ourselves? I just think that's a great quote. So that sits on my desk because every once in a while I ask myself, okay, you know, I'm so emotionally engaged with these people. I'm so emotionally engaged with the way we do things. My reputation is built on this. In church world, we're famous for some of the things that we do. So I'm not objective. So to ask the question when we're trying to make a big decision, if I suddenly left this organization and our board brought in a new pastor who had no emotional attachment to anybody or anything, and they were purely driven by the mission and vision of this organization, what would they do? And I'm telling you, that question brings terrifying clarity sometimes to decisions that we're trying to make. So I encourage leaders all the time, you need to take that question, restate it for your specific context, put it somewhere where you see it every once in a while and ask yourself the question, okay, what would the next guy do? What would the next woman, what would the next person in this position do who walked in and took my place? And again, the clarity, again, it's a bit terrifying. So that's the question.
Well, the sixth and final question is, what would a great leader do?
I love this question. This is I got this from Bill Hybels several years ago. We were having a conversation, and Bill is a friend and a mentor and runs one of the largest nonprofit organizations that around, really, in terms of churches and church world. And again, it was way out in front of the rest of us when it comes to innovation in the local church. And I asked him, I said, you know, what are some of the things that you think about when you're making a tough decision? And immediately he said, I asked the question, what would a great leader do? The reason I love this question is it takes me beyond average. It drags me out of my comfort zone. Suddenly, I'm thinking of Winston Churchill. Suddenly, I'm thinking of Martin Luther King Jr. Suddenly, I'm thinking of Gandhi, of Jesus, of the great leaders who did the unusual thing, the bold thing, the courageous thing, the vision thing, the thing that took them beyond, you know, personal gain and personal reputation. So even in the small questions, even in the small issues rather, the issues that aren't going to change the world or even change your organization, to at least pause and give yourself permission to know the answer to the question, okay, if I was a great leader, in Jim Collins' terms, if I was a level five leader, if I was truly selfless, if I was truly committed to the organization more than I'm committed to myself, if I was really more committed to this organization than I was my own ego or reputation, what would a great leader do? And I'm telling you, again, it's sort of like the question before this one. The answer sometimes is terrifying, but it just pushes us out of our little itty-bitty world where it's all about me and my reputation and my income and my bonus and my. What would a great leader do? And again, I tell leaders, even if you don't do what a great leader would do, I think you owe it to yourself to at least give yourself the margin to discover what a great leader would do. And maybe just the thought of what would a great leader do if I were a great leader, if I were selfless. Sometimes just knowing that is enough to pull us beyond the boundaries of our own ego and our own sense of self-centeredness to actually do the great thing. So that's a great question for every issue and for every question. What would a truly great leader do if they were in this situation facing this question?
What would a great leader leave us with as a final thought?
I have no idea.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for spending this time today, and thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. For more leadership content, plus an article summarizing today's podcast, you can visit InsideNorthPoint.org. That's InsideNorthPoint.org.